So I was told to pick a spot, so I picked a spot. And it was suggested, how about Judd Barat? So I picked Judd Barat. So we're going to read chapter 10 from Canto 5. The discussion between Judd Barat and Maharaj Rahugana. Very nice section. And it starts with the chapter summary at the beginning, so we get the chapter summary. And this is all prose anyway, so there's no chanting responsibly. And we'll cover text 1 and 2, because text 1 has no purport. In this chapter, Bharat Maharaj, now Judd Bharata, was successfully accepted by King Rahugana, the ruler of the states known as Sindhu and Sovira. The king forced Judd Bharat to carry his palanquin and chastised him because he did not carry it properly. A carrier of King Rahugana's palanquin was needed, and to fulfill this need, the chief carriers found Judd Bharat as the most unlikely person to do the work. He was therefore forced to carry, the most likely person to do the work. He was therefore forced to carry the palanquin. Judd Bharat, however, did not protest this proud order, but humbly accepted the job and carried the palanquin. While carrying it, however, he was very careful to see that he did not step on an ant. And whenever he saw one, he would stop until the ant had passed. Because of this, he could not keep pace with the other carriers. The king within the palanquin became very disturbed and chastised Judd Bharat with filthy language. Ooh. But Judd Bharat, being completely freed from the bodily conception, did not protest. He proceeded carrying the palanquin. When he continued, as before, the king threatened him with punishment, and being threatened by the king, Judd Bharat began to talk, because previously he didn't talk. He protested against the filthy language used by the king when the king chastised him, and the king, hearing the instructions of Judd Bharat, was awakened to his real knowledge. When he came to his consciousness, he understood that he had offended a great, learned, and saintly person. At that time, he very humbly and respectfully prayed to Judd Bharat. He now wanted to understand the deep meaning of the philosophical words used by Judd Bharat, and with great sincerity, he begged his pardon. He admitted that if one offends the lotus feet of a pure devotee, he is certainly punished by the trident of Lord Shiva. So that's the chapter summary, and here's text 1. Shukadev Goswami continued, "My dear king, after this, King Rahugana, ruler of the states known as Sindhu and Sovira, was going to Kapilashrama. When the king's chief palanquin carriers reached the banks of the river Ikshumati, they needed another carrier. Therefore, they began searching for someone, and by chance, they came upon Judd Bharata. They considered the fact that Judd Bharata was very young and strong and had firm limbs. Like cows and asses, he was quite fit to carry loads. Thinking in this way, although the great soul Judd Bharat was unfit for such work, they nonetheless unhesitatingly forced him to carry the palanquin." Text 2. "The palanquin, however, was very erratically carried by Judd Bharat due to his sense of nonviolence. As he stepped forward, he checked before him every 3 feet to see whether he was about to step on ants. Consequently, he could not keep pace with the other carriers. Due to this, the palanquin was shaking, and King Rahugana immediately asked the carriers, "Why are you carrying this palanquin unevenly? Better carry it properly." Purport. Although Jad Bharata was forced to carry the palanquin, he did not give up his sympathetic feelings towards the poor ants passing on the road. A devotee of the Lord does not forget his devotional service and other favorable activities even when he is in a most distressful condition. Jad Bharata was a qualified Brahmana, highly elevated in spiritual knowledge, yet he was forced to carry the palanquin. He did not mind this, but while walking on the road, he could not forget his duty to avoid killing even an ant. A Vaishnava is never envious or unnecessarily violent. There were many ants on the path, but Jad Bharat took care by looking ahead 3 feet. When the ants were no longer in his way, he would place his foot on the ground. A Vaishnava is very kind at heart to all living entities. In his Sankhya Yoga, Lord Kapila Dev explains, Surada Sarvadehi Nam. Living entities assume different bodily forms. Those who are not Vaishnavas consider only human society worthy of their sympathy, but Krishna claims to be the supreme father of all life forms. Consequently, the Vaishnavas take care not to annihilate untimely or unnecessarily any life form. All living entities have to fulfill a certain duration for being encaged in a particular type of material body. They have to finish the duration allotted a particular body before being promoted or evolved to another body. Killing an animal or any other living being simply places an impediment in the way of his completing his term of imprisonment in a certain body. One should therefore not kill bodies for one's sense gratification, for this will implicate one in sinful life. The principle of nonviolence. It's a standard of the mode of goodness. Remember some time ago when Chaturatma was here? He did a lot of work with the New Age community and, you know, with the restaurant, because he wanted to promote people to come to the restaurant. So he was vegetarian society and New Age people and yoga people and this and that, mainly because the primary income of the temple was the restaurant, and he was supporting his household in addition. So over on that area in the restaurant, there was all kinds of literature from all kinds of organizations and all kinds of stuff over there. So I remember looking at that one time, and there was a Buddhist group, and one of their brochures or pamphlets had in big letters, "Ahimsa is the primary dharma," or something like that. So, kind of weird, because Buddha rejected the Vedas, and the whole idea of dharma is Vedic, but he rejected the Vedas. Anyway, ahimsa is the primary dharma. We not surrender to Krishna because Krishna is not in the picture, it's just Buddha goodness. So there's non-violence that's Buddha goodness. And that's not, mode of goodness isn't spiritual. Mode of goodness is material. the discussion yesterday evening. We're in a room that doesn't have windows to the outside, so we don't know what's on the other side of the wall. But if there's a window over here or there, we can see what's on the other side of the wall. Similarly, the mode of goodness is like a window. You can see what's on the other side of material existence through the mode of goodness. Goodness, cleanliness is next to godliness. Goodness is the window through which one can, you're not in the transcendental realm, but you can see what the transcendental realm is, or you can peer into it from the mode of goodness. Even in Buddhism, it's not that nonviolence is an end unto itself. It's a means to get to the end. Because the end is nothingness. Nonviolence is somethingness, not nothingness. So in that sense, one can say, well, gee, that's inconsistent. They're recommending a means to get to something that doesn't match the means. An end that doesn't match the means. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, the end and the means are on the same platform. Meaning, the principle of nonviolence is based upon the conception of the soul. And the soul being part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. So out of respect for the Supreme Soul, there's respect for the living entity part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. And then specifically, what the purport is explaining is, there's a natural duration of life. And we're not of a living entity within a particular life form. And we don't have the right to go and just interrupt that natural flow of the duration of life in that life form. You do so, and that's sinful. You go down in the cycle of life rather than go up due to that sinful activity. And then the other living entity is also then has to take birth again to continue or complete that natural duration of life that they would have undergone. Unless the action is taken in devotion to Krishna, in devotional service to Krishna, like walk across the floor. There may be something, or you breathe, or you drink water, or something. So if you do those things in service to Krishna, and as a result of your doing unnecessary harm, just in the course of existing, having a body and existing and doing things, other living entities yield their life, there's spiritual benefit for them. We don't go out of our way to give harm to other living entities because there's spiritual benefit to them. But if it happens, if it so happens, then there's spiritual benefit for them. It's, in other words, the picture is holistic. It's connected to the Supreme Lord and the part and parcel living entity and, Sambandh again, the relationship between matter and the controller of matter, living entities, and the controller of living entities, and the Supreme Lord. The means and the end are in harmony with one another, and are not in disharmony with one another. So the non-violence that's being spoken of here is a devotee, in this case Jed Bharat, but the devotee doesn't lose their sense of living in transcendence while they're doing ordinary work. Even if it's ordinary work that's not nice. A brahmana carrying the palanquin of a king. It's not nice. It's not suited activity. But because the king was ignorant and the palanquin carriers were ignorant, and they engaged him that way, forced him, it says several times, forced him. So he didn't complain. Well, what are you doing? I'm a Brahmin. I don't carry the palanquin of the king. He just carried the palanquin of the king. But he didn't give up his respect for the life cycle of other living entities. He didn't interrupt that. Because now I've got this palanquin carrier occupation, so I don't need to think about the spiritual principles of life anymore. I've got my duty. This happens, not, you know, exactly the same manner, but in principle, it's difficult, what is it, to keep transcendence in mind while doing ordinary activities. It's one thing, you pay attention to the ordinary activities and you do them carefully and nicely, and then when that activity is over, then you wake up and say, oh, I forgot Krishna. Or you're so mindful of Krishna you can't pay attention to your practical activities. Either one of those is far more common than the principle of bhakti, which is perform your prescribed duty and always think of Krishna. And the principles that one lives one's life by don't get set aside while you're doing your practical activities of life. The only way that's possible is like the discussion yesterday evening, aham ajnana jam tamaha, the darkest born of ignorance is dispelled. Otherwise, we have this dichotomy thing going on. We can think of Krishna, or we can think of doing our activity nicely, but to do them both, we can't do it. The ability to remember Krishna comes from Krishna. It says that in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness come from Him. So, how to do your service nicely comes from Him. And to remember Him comes from Him. So the solution is connect with Him. Follow the means provided by the personality of Godhead to do your duties properly and to be mindful of Him. As you're doing your duties properly. That you do with devotion, and then remembrance of Him is automatically there. So that's what Jed Bharat did. He was from his previous two lives ago as Bharat Maharaj, he was in a very elevated status of Krishna consciousness. And he didn't lose it. It wasn't covered over with forgetfulness. It continued in the body of a deer, continued in the body of Jed Bharat. Didn't get covered over. He remained tolerant and didn't complain or didn't criticize the palanquin carriers. But he did speak to the king, we heard from the chapter summary. He let the king have it. Now, why did he choose previously to say nothing? Well, one of the understandings that we have is he chose to say nothing because he didn't want to get entangled again in material activity, so he just zoned out. He just acted as if an avaduta that didn't understand anything, like when he was a small boy. His father was a Brahmin, his father wanted to teach him ABC, and he did it backwards. I mean, he certainly couldn't understand ABC, but he did it backwards. And try again, as much as his father tried, he kept doing it backwards. So he considered the boy's a dullard. so he wouldn't keep, you know, pressuring him to do something, so he could just be aloof. He was deliberate. And on and on and on. So he was certainly very conscious, but he was conscious of the fact, I don't want to make this same mistake again, of my attention going away from the goal of life. So he accepted different activities. Without protest. There's other ones that he also was engaged in previously. Without protest. Because, you know, it's not the essence. It's this activity, that activity, let me stay absorbed in the essence being absorption in Krishna consciousness. So, when he was engaged in the palanquin carrying, there's living entities in the body of ants, and I don't want to interrupt their life cycle. I just let them pass, and then I'll carry on. So if the king upstairs is a little disturbed, he can be disturbed, but I don't want to step on an ant. I don't want to take the life of another living entity. That's pretty extreme. I mean, what about mosquitoes? You know what Prabhupada's instruction is about mosquitoes? If they attack you, then you can swat them. Aggressors, according to laws of Manu. If they attack you, then you can defend yourself. So if they're just zooming around, you don't attack them. But if they land and start, you know, then you, it was one of the instructions that he gave to the servants when they were putting up the mosquito net, and there was mosquitoes inside the mosquito net. So what do I do about the mosquitoes in the mosquito net? If they start attacking, you can remove them. Anyway, mindful of spiritual principle of life carries on when you're Krishna conscious, regardless of the external circumstance, which is the message that's being presented here. So that's a transcendental purpose of nonviolence, not the other one, nonviolent for nonviolence's sake, or just stand alone without any connection to the soul's relationship with the Supreme Soul. There may be, value, or holding the value of nonviolence without any real spiritual purpose. So, without the real spiritual purpose, what happens if you do an activity that's prescribed by Scripture, but you're not mindful of the purpose behind it while you're doing that activity? Shadbir Bhaktir Vinashati. It's an obstacle in the awakening of bhakti, and the purpose that bhakti can serve. The purpose that bhakti can serve is connecting with the personality of Godhead. So just one more time, nonviolence isn't a standalone principle. Those who value nonviolence commonly are violent. Two Prabhupada stories. One, I was listening to a morning walk conversation, and the devotees were expressing to Prabhupada how amazing it was when you negotiated the contract with Dainapan. Because Dainapan agreed to print Krishna book. But, you know, Japanese business people don't make concessions. But with Prabhupada, they made a concession that they never made before and didn't do since. The devotees were saying, they agreed to print without some money up front. They never do that. You have to put some money up front. Otherwise, it's just coming out of their, you know, interest-free loan or something or other, and they don't do that. The business people don't do that. And you put something up front, and then they'll print. But they agreed to put the something up front themselves. And the devotees were saying, Prabhupada, it was amazing. And then Prabhupada commented, yes, and when I was meeting this person, I said, you say you're a Buddhist and you eat meat? How can you be a Buddhist? You're not a Buddhist. Same as he would say, you know, to others, to the Christians, and you're not a Christian. I was hearing Prabhupada, after he had visited Sweden, he was telling a story about some hall they were in Stockholm. And after the class, a young Christian man came forward and said, you know, Swamiji, you spoke very nicely, I'm a Christian. And Prabhupada said, you're not a Christian. Prabhupada said, I never met the person before, but I just told him, you're not a Christian. And the young man was taken aback. Well, yes, I am a Christian. Then Prabhupada quizzed him. You say you're a Christian, does that mean you accept the teachings of Christ? Yes. Does Christ teach thou shalt not kill? Yes. Are you eating meat? Yes. You're not a Christian. And then the back and forth about, well, eating meat doesn't mean you're killing. Why do you say it's not killing? So the whether Buddhist or Christian, that the value of nonviolence is universal, but are people actually following it? And what their standard of violence, nonviolence is very unusual. The problem is when there's a disconnect with the personality of Godhead, even in the name of religion, whether it's Buddhism or Christianity, when there's disconnect with the personality of Godhead, then the definition of things starts moving all over the place. Or to speak of the higher purpose, starts takes you in the wrong direction. Shadbir Bhakti Pranashati. Bhakti is destroyed. Certainly the teachings of Buddha and the teachings of Christ are that of nonviolence. But it's quite amazing when people are adherents to such doctrine and they can't even recognize what violence is some way rationalize it. I could tell some anecdotes of conversations with people on this topic, but you know, it's just once the mind is said it's okay, then they'll even look for a scriptural reference to say it's okay. I'll just do one, because it was meaningful. Around this time of the year, students are getting off of college. They finished their exams a little bit later. Finished their exams and going back home. So I was on a plane from New York to Chicago, and there's a girl. It's Southwest Airlines. But generally, in Southwest Airlines, it's great wearing a dhoti because people don't want to sit next to you. So get an empty seat if the plane isn't full. But in this case, you know, I was toward the front, and one college student sat next to me. Girl from Columbia University, and she had her Bible with her, and I thought, oh boy, here we go. But it wasn't one of those. It was she wanted to understand what tradition am I from, and what are the teachings. And so I just did what Prabhupada did in a conversation like that. Said, you know, you're a Christian, you accept the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. Are you a vegetarian? And if you're not, then you're killing. And she didn't say, like, Cardinal Daniel Youth says that animals don't have soul. She didn't do that one. She just went through the New Testament, you know, section by section, because she apparently had researched and knew where references were, where it seemed to indicate to her that it's okay. The point of agreement was being Christian means following Christ's teachings and to do so for the purpose of pleasing Him. That's bhakti, the bhakti principle. The object of love, you do what is pleasing to them. And she found a place in, I forget, Paul, the book of Paul, that said something to the effect that people should not be excluded from the mercy of Christ because of their habits of their life. They may be sinful or bad. They shouldn't be excluded from the mercy of Christ. So that's fine. So we don't exclude persons because of their habits are bad or their activities are sinful. But what we're not talking about is being disqualified from the mercy of Christ. We're speaking about you have options. You have to have financial means to go to, even if you're on a scholarship, to go to Columbia University. And you're smart, so you know, and you have options. It's not like you're off in the middle of a desert. You don't have options. So imagine Christ is holding a lamb in His arms, and you approach Him and say, "Can I have that lamb and kill the lamb and make the lamb my food? Is that okay?" And what would Christ say? Sure, it's okay. We don't make any distinction about receiving compassion of Christ. I was very surprised. She said, you know, I think He'd say it's okay. Because, you know, the book of Paul, the parting request was, well, just think it over. Ask yourself that question. If you approach Christ, you have options. There's other things. It's not, that's the only thing. And He's holding a lamb and you say, "Can I have the lamb? I want to kill the lamb and cook the lamb." Is He going to say, okay? We have other options. Or would He say, you know, please don't take the life of the lamb? I'll think about it. What's there to think about? Principle of nonviolence gets lost when apparently on the authority of Scripture it's okay. Quite bizarre. There was a big uproar when in Washington, D.C., there was a, this is many years ago, there was a rally outside of the White House to restore Tibet to Dalai Lama. So Dalai Lama was a guest of honor for this rally. And they put him up in a hotel and they offered him vegetarian meal. And he rejected and said he wanted something, I forget, veal. And then people said, well, how can you eat veal? You're a vegetarian. Said, not in Tibet. So take this away and bring the other. It was like all over the Washington Post and big. And he's, you know, a modern day saint. Revered by many, at least, in that way. And after that, there was another rally in Central Park, and people asked him about it, and he just dismissed it. Didn't want to talk about it. Anyway, without the proper repose of principles of goodness, how is one going to enter into transcendence? It's not the means to get to transcendence, but without it, you can't. How are you going to do that? Certainly, descending mercy can clear one of all things, but then you're on the other side, you're observing the world of goodness, like Jed Bharat, respecting the life of other living entities. Now, practical application for us. Circumstances of life may get complicated or compromised, or we're in a hurry, or we want to get something done, or whatever it is. Circumstances of life, we don't set aside transcendental principle while pursuing circumstances of life. Whatever, if necessary, you slow down or you pause or whatever you have to do, but we don't set aside spiritual principle in executing the practical activities of life. Any discussion, Jed Bharat? The palanquin carriers asked him, and he just accepted the arrangement of the palanquin carriers.
Does he have that, looked like a brahmana, like he had like...
No, he had the body of, strong and stout and... Bodily, he looked like a suitable palanquin carrier.
Not like. And then the follow-up question is, so it says in the Prabhupada, generally Vaishnava is always very kind at heart. So, when the heart is very kind, then it becomes so soft. When it is soft, so when you, approach or talk or do, it becomes like soft nature, which sometimes there is a difference between being weak and soft. So how do you draw the line of the difference?
You act on Krishna's behalf.
Because practically sometimes you have to be strong.
Yeah, on Krishna's behalf. But that doesn't mean not soft. Strong doesn't mean not soft. You act on Krishna's behalf. Compassion. So maybe strong. On Krishna's behalf. Not protect self-protection, it's acting on Krishna's behalf. Fulfilling Krishna's interest. That's the line. That was your question. Yes.
Maharaj, so in chapter 12.
Chapter 12?
Yeah.
Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah. Krishna is saying, Arjuna, that the best understanding of me.
Turn the volume down a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you.
So the best understanding of me is that you understand me as Satchidananda Vigraha, the person as I am. But it's okay if one is one level down and being impersonalist, right? There is one level down.
That's not the Bhagavad Gita that I read. Krishna doesn't say what you just said. Krishna said.
This is the chapter 12 that.
I know what it says, but it doesn't say what you said.
But I'm just trying to kind of
But it's not what he said. Arjuna asks, which is better?
Yeah.
And Krishna says. Both can get you there, but this one's better. They're not down and down, and it's both are okay. Didn't say both are okay.
So this is just the English thing. So the point that I'm trying.
That's a big difference in my use of language is very important, and I don't want to put words in Krishna's mouth and just pretend like it's okay because it's not what Krishna said. Go ahead, keep going.
So the point that I'm trying to make is that there are religions.
There are what?
There are religions, division of faith. There are
divisions of faith. Okay.
Yeah, there are religions which are in certain, which are trying to basically elevate people from very low consciousness to the higher consciousness. So maybe the people who believe in nonviolence or people who have faith in Jesus Christ, they are starting somewhere.
No problem. The people who believe in Krishna don't follow Krishna also. Their faith is Komala Shraddha in Bhakti Vinod Thakur's language. Prakriti Bhaktas. Not just this religion, that religion, just principle. Very preliminary. So what they can accept is very, very limited because they're in a preliminary stage of faith. So, what's the point?
So the point is that they are starting somewhere.
Oh, fine.
It's better than being somebody who is atheist.
Okay, fine. Fine. Fantastic. Fantastic. Just start somewhere. We do it all the time. Engage people in taking prasadam and chanting and being somewhere. We also are very clear what our standards are. We don't like impose or force our standards, but we like this discussion, for example, the discussion with this Columbia University student. She's a bright girl. She's not, she's thoroughly read in the Bible. So I was asking, according to the scriptural text that you accept as the truth, is this okay? And the answer is, it's okay. Not just the beginning, but is it okay? So we as practicing Vaishnavas want to help people take the next step, the next step, the next step, the next step, whatever they are, to go to look what's the next step. That's what we want to do. Don't like get a stick and hit people. We want to take the next step.
Same thing applies with Hindu also.
Sure. Therefore, we need to know what the standards are. We need to know where people are at and help them take the next step. Whatever that is. Yes?
Guru Maharaj, Jadabharata,
what kind of meditation was performing?
Like Shalana Kirtan?
Jadabharata? What was his meditation? I don't know. Doesn't mention. Ability for that comes from Krishna too.
We need to make some endeavor for you.
Of course.
So what?
But you can make an endeavor and it doesn't happen. You don't make an endeavor and it happens. Like wealth. Some persons endeavor like crazy. They don't get wealthy. Some persons don't endeavor at all and they get wealthy. They inherit money. They become wealthy. So, yes, but that's due to some past activity. So it's the two things. Bhakti involves two things. Effort and mercy. Good way, something that I appreciate very much, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describing the Damodar Leela. The 2 inches too short, he says, represents both effort and mercy. You have to have both. And we're dependent by nature. We're tiny. And we're dependent. So we can endeavor like anything. It's up to Krishna. Because he supplies remembrance. That's the way it works. We should do, but we're dependent upon Krishna. Is that right? Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Thinking about the multiple conversations I've had with my boss, who's an evangelistic Christian, and one of the argument points is the scriptures in Bible, Old Testament and New Testament, speak a lot about animal sacrifices. When a celebration is to be had, it's yay, animal sacrifice for the goat, let's have at it. So his point is repeatedly that in the scripture now, animals are considered evil for humans, and you know, the classic Jesus Christ also, during the Last Supper as well.
Well, which depends on what translation you read. And you know, the principle is very simple. Is it a better principle to live by if other living entities experience less suffering for your existence? Is that a better principle to live by, or does it matter? Ask Christ. Does it matter? Is it a better principle, or just doesn't matter? It's very kind of common sense. So now, if there are references to such things, how do we process those references to such things? Well, there's reference to such things because, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just like in the Quran, the first part of the Quran is for people who can't control themselves, and the second part is for people who can control themselves. And, you know, most people go for the first part and don't pay attention to the second part. But if you can't control yourself, then there's a means of sacrifice. But better principle to live by is you don't bring pain and suffering to other living entities, whatever the species of life is. Do one to others. Okay, if you know, if you agree to this principle, if this is like your standard, then why not sacrifice a human? Oh no, why not? Why no? It's a better principle to live by. Then now what about animals? Well, it doesn't matter. Why does it matter? Is it a better principle to live by or not? Is there suffering or not? Is there a soul within or not? And please tell me, as Prabhupada asked Professor or Cardinal Daniel Gill, show me in the Bible what it says, animals have no soul. Can you show me in the Bible? Where does it say that? So where does the, if it's not there in the Bible, where does the idea come from? Because we accept the Word of God, not the word of man. According to the word of God, where? I mean, all that you can hope for with these people is become a little thoughtful. Because dogma, they'll stick by. That's all I was hoping to do with this girl. Just like, you know, think about it. Christ is holding a lamb in his arms, and you approach him and say, I really like lamb. Can I have the lamb? Can I kill the lamb? I mean, it does say in the Bible, there's, and in other scriptures, there's process of sacrifice. So can I sacrifice the lamb? And eat it? I have lots of other things, but it's just like it. So, you know, the principle is for the satisfaction of the Supreme. That's a point that's, you know, there's common agreement. Being Christian means you do that which is pleasing to Christ. So if there's this principle or this action or that action, upon what was the standard of pleasing Christ going to be most likely to match. It doesn't matter. Or less suffering to other living beings. Ahimsa is kind of a, it's a no-brainer. It's a better principle to live by. Living more pleasing to Christ. You do like that. No, it doesn't matter. Really? Then where do you draw the line? Well, we don't, we draw the line with humans. Thou shalt not kill becomes thou shalt not murder. But that's not what it used to say when I was a little boy. How did it change from kill to murder? You know, you bought into it, my friend. Let's just think, you know, aside from, you know, the 20 years ago translation and the today's translation, let's just step back and from whoever adjusted the editing, let's speak principle, or consider principle. The most compassionate person, who in your book is either God or the Son of God or both or whatever, compassionate, the maximum perfection of compassion, it doesn't matter. Why? Because animals have no soul. Really? The animals that feel pain. Let's go to a slaughterhouse and hear the crying of the animals and they have no pain. What do you think? Pain or no pain? When your dog gets, you know, hit, he cries. You see, tears come from cows. They cry. No pain. No soul. There's pain. You get cut and you have pain, and animals get cut and they don't have pain? Really? You believe that? Really? Because they have no soul, right? No pain. For persons who can't control themselves. And the concession for those that can't control themselves is restriction, 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 restriction. And the priest says into the ear of the animal, there's a certain mantra, as you're being killed, you'll have the opportunity to kill. And a little light goes on to the person that says, gee, from my tongue, I can be killed? Not a good idea. But those that can't control themselves, restriction, restriction, restriction. Which means you really shouldn't do it. That's what restriction means. Okay, I'm going to end. Thank you very much, Prabhupada.